Selamat datang Apak Khabar. The nighttime marina streets of Singapore sparkle along the steamy serpentine street circuit for the 13th round of the season, the Grand Prix of Singapore. F1 has left Europe and is now in Southeast Asia for the last portion of the season, but some status quo elements remain, like the one in pole position. The safety car is most assuredly guaranteed to make an appearance in this race. Will it affect the outcome? Who will be the Singapore flyer, and whose rear wing will be in a sling? Okay, la listeners, stay tuned. Namasama, Desiree, and this is your F1 Weekly Singapore Grand Prix Racecast. Salamat malam.
There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 638, September 30th, 2013. Nasser?
This edition of F1 Weekly Podcast is brought to you by Singtel, ringing 3 and 4 in a row for Sebastian Vettel.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, Red Bull should put Ricciardo in Weber's seat as soon as possible, as far as moi is concerned. Lotus F1 should take Hülkenberg, not Massa. And mannequins will be replacing all the empty seats at Korea, so we have some nice images of those full grandstands, Nasser. What do you think about that?
Fantastic. Keep up the good work, Korea.
And of course, we've got Motorsports Mondial with the King of Karachi and special interview with Facundo Regalia de Argentina. Nasser, welcome to the studio. How are you?
Thank you, sir. Doing good. Life is good. And, you know, I watched the Singapore Grand Prix while I was hanging out in Santa Cruz. And then in the morning, when the sun came up in California, which it does every day, I was at the boardwalk and I heard someone say, "Hey, dude, where's Nando's championship, man?" And I turned around and this guy was looking really depressed. He needed some help. So I told him to send an email to the host at f1weekly.com. He'll make you feel good about Nando.
How could you not feel good about Nando? Nando is the man doing great work with a poor package. But so you've got to respect it.
I do. Tremendous respect for Nando the racer, but there is one guy right now who is not happy with Nando.
That's true. He is doing some of the psychological stuff.
Nando himself.
Yes.
We'll talk on this later.
Absolutely. Speaking of Singapore and Singtel, terrific Grand Prix as they all are. Unfortunately, I did not see it because I was attending the 2013 Citroën Car Club Rally Rendezvous of the West Coast of the United States of America in beautiful Cambria Pines Lodge, and it was magnificent, except they did not have NBC Sports Network on the tele.
How did they even go for you, sir, if I may ask, and how many cars showed up?
50 cars showed up, outstanding. It's the people, really, that we love. And it was just a wonderful, wonderful weekend, a total of 4 days altogether. And certainly, the Citroën community is lifted with this kind of activity.
Lifted you higher and higher?
Higher and higher.
But I'm kind of impressed with 50. Did they bring all the ones registered in Mexico and Canada also?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Because it's been a while since they saw 50 cars in the U.S.
Thank you very much, Nasser. Keep up the good work.
But they have some nice cars. I mean, you know, I was at the
beautiful cars. Yeah. A beautiful Citroën DS21 Palace is a beautiful thing to look at and sit in.
My question to you, sir, is what are we going to do now? Bastian has won 4 of the last 5 races. things and winds are looking good in the remaining races, what will you do?
What will I do? I will think and concentrate on 2014. And
I'm talking about this season.
Still in 2013?
Yes. Well, Mark, some questions for you. Will Mark get a win?
Mark Webber will not get a win, and I really think that they're going to start thinking about putting in Ricciardo so he can get some seat time. Mark Webber, he doesn't care about anything. He's got a 10th-place grid penalty. Why? Because he broke the rules about getting a ride back to the paddock. You know why? Because he doesn't care anymore. He's thinking Porsche. He's not thinking Christian Horner or Sebastian Vettel. He's trying to ride this out, have some fun. There is no chance of a win, and if I was them, replace him with Cristiano D'Amato, but with Ricciardo.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you that they should bring in, you know, Ricky in and get him going and see how he does. Because if he bombs completely in the remaining four or five races, Dr. Marco can say to Dietrich Mateschitz, I made a mistake, let me make another change. But, you know, looks like, you know, Mark Webber has lost
interest.
The drive.
Absolutely.
You know, personally and professionally.
The motivation.
Yeah, and I heard he has even given half of his Vegemite sandwich to Massa, who has taken it in a positive way, and he's now on fire.
Yeah, he is on fire. But still, no.
Something he should have done 3 years ago, but apparently did not get that memo from Luca.
Very, very true. And there's so much activity going on. People are saying that I'm thinking Fernando, if he doesn't bite his lip and stop with the criticism of Ferrari, which he does in subtle, he could get fired.
Well, they fired the professor.
Exactly.
He was shown the door, so who is Nando, who has not yet won a championship with them? That's how they will look at it. And I think bringing in Kimi has really rattled his cage. I will not be surprised if he leaves Ferrari before his contract is out. Many reasons I say this. A, the package is not very good, unfortunately. And when you make a comment to the media when they ask you on a race weekend, this is your birthday weekend, what do you wish? And you say someone else's car, Signor Luca, is going to be livid as he was. And then they have brought in a guy, you know, the guy doesn't listen to anybody. You know, if you send a message to him, Nando is faster than you, he's going to, so, you know, he's not going to pull over or slow down or do anything. And the way Kimi has gone the last two seasons, if he keeps going, if we see the Kimi of McLaren days, then your hombre has really got a... If he thought he had a problem with the rookie, wait till he's racing with Raikkonen as a teammate.
Yeah, but so, Fernando can hold his own.
No, there's no question about it. And I still, you know, we're discussing this over breakfast today. I still think the 2007 championship was his, not Raikkonen's or Hamilton's. So there's no doubt about the guy's capability and what he can do. But I think he needs some little mental, some coaching from some tough guy like Mr. T.
Absolutely,
you know,
absolutely.
What, you know
and
what
we,
I'm saying?
We don't know what could happen with Fernando making Montezemolo mad. He could wind up anywhere because a Fernando that's used to be unavailable, finishing his career at Ferrari, now suddenly theoretically available, finishing his career perhaps elsewhere. That opens up interest by a lot of people, including Mercedes.
Yeah, but, you know, they got good people. I mean, they have two young guys. They can do the job. But he needs to go to a place where they need some help. And the only place that has some future and Honda coming back in 2015, you are telling me, and I've heard it before, that all traces of him being there, as they say in a song, you know, there are still traces of you in my heart, even though you're gone. So his traces have been removed from a place near, what is it called, Woking? Mm-hmm. You know, there's a big park there. And so they have been removed. But stranger things have happened. You know, if Honda comes in and supplies free engine, the package is good, and they say, hey, we want Fernando Alonso, then maybe he'll show up, you know.
It's very possible.
And I got to say something, man. When Fernando Alonso won that Malaysian Grand Prix, not won, when the race started and he went into their first corner ahead of, I think it was the Ferraris, and he was followed by a guy who had just come into Formula One. I'm looking like I think it was a Ferrari front row. I don't remember exactly, but it was a silver cars streaking ahead, 1-2. I had goosebumps then, and you can see I have them now as we speak. That victory in Germany was impressive over Massa in the closing stage, and the Monza victory was super impressive. There was some, you know, things did not go his way in Hungary and Japan, and the man would have won the championship in his first year with McLaren. So we want excitement. We want tremendous talent and great teams. So let's see what happens.
Let's see what happens. So anyway, let's talk about Singapore. Did you enjoy Singapore? Night race,
sir,
good weather, no rain again.
Night race, rain in the mist, in the desert, wherever, in Krakatoa or Mali, I enjoy a motor race. So yes, I did enjoy Singapore Grand Prix very much. The late race dicing behind the runaway leader was fantastic.
It was exciting. It was exciting. Qualifying was very, very interesting. And really, for you, the big story was Esteban Gutierrez making it all the way into Q3.
That was fantastic. And I know Hülkenberg had some issues with his DRS. But to see Esteban in Q3, I was very, very pleased. I immediately sent a text message to his PR guy, Mr. Marcos Granados, and him and I have stayed in contact on a regular basis, and he responded, and that was very good. This is something, it's easy for me to say, but this is something he should have done in the third or fourth race. But, you know, Formula One with no testing and the new tire issues, it has really become a very tough nut to crack. But I was very pleased to see that happen.
No, it was very, very good. For me, big story, Paul de Resta stuck in Q1, with the Kitrum and the Marussia. Not good. And, of course, your token Williams, which is pathetic.
Yes. And, and you know, it's pole position, or at least the front row, is expected from Sebastian Vettel and one of the Mercedes drivers. And, interestingly, Sebastian Vettel is now the only man who has not yet been out-qualified by his teammate. And I very much hope Mark gets a win. Because if he does not and his teammate gets 10 wins and another championship, that's not a good sign.
No, and it's not going to look good on his resume.
Yeah, but that's why, you know, it was good he got a job before he had to update his resume.
Now, the big story was Kimi Raikkonen apparently having some kind of back pain.
I wonder how that happened.
And I wonder how Montezemolo is thinking about this. What? Did we just hire an invalid?
Yeah, damaged goods.
Yeah.
But damaged goods still delivers.
He did deliver, but he didn't make it out of Q2.
Yeah, but Q3, Q4 with him and Nando is not an issue. At the end of the race, if you don't watch anything and you look at the results, how did these guys get there?
And that's exactly what happened with the results. You go, what? How did that happen? As a matter of fact, a couple of drivers couldn't believe that Raikkonen finished on the podium.
Well, you know, this there is a reason why there's a difference between Raikkonen and Grosjean. May not be big, but there is. And the same with Nando and all his other teammates, bar one.
Absolutely. And let's not forget, Romain Grosjean did an outstanding job in qualifying. Qualifying P3, second row, ahead of his teammate, which is what he needs to do now.
Grosjean, he's no longer the bad boy of Formula One, and this was his best result since Budapest, where he was third on the grid as well. And, you know, we've, over the years, I've sang quite a few praises of Grosjean, Hülkenberg, Esteban Gutierrez, and there are a few other whippersnappers who are coming through the ranks. And it's just a matter of giving these people a little time to gel and see how they can do. He has done enough now, and so has Hülkenberg, to deserve a place where they most probably will stay in Formula One for a while.
And Felipe Massa, once again, out-qualifying his teammate, yet never finishes above the teammate in the race.
Well, Massa is a man on a mission to stay in Formula One next season. And, of course, no more nice hombre for Nando. He has now out-qualified numero uno 5 times so far this season. But it takes no more than a lap or two for the Ferrari with the black camera color
system,
yeah, to come ahead.
And of course,
surprising, Daniel, but not really.
Daniel Ricciardo once again in the top 10, and he's doing this pretty regularly with an inferior car, so I think he could be pretty exciting next year in the Red Bull.
You know, I hope so.
We all hope so.
Yeah, we've spoken to a few drivers, team owners who have competed against him. They have a very high opinion of him. And I've also read quite a few comments about him. And also, you know, something that has come up, that Daniel, these are from veterans of motor racing media, you know, people who go to every race for the last 20 years. Then he qualifies better than Jean-Éric Vergne, his teammate. But in the race, it's Jean-Éric Vergne who's a little bit more impressive. But I think both of these guys are very good talent. And I think there's a good... I mean, this is not Buemi and Liuzzi and Scott Speed scenario where Dr. Mark is like wondering every day, what do I know? Who do I fire first? I think they got good people here.
Yeah. The other surprising thing, has Mercedes lost it? And, you know, they were getting pole after pole after pole swapped between Lewis Hamilton and Nico Rosberg. And now Sebastian Vettel has said enough is enough, and he could just dominate the rest of this season.
I think that's what's going to happen. He's on a hot roll, and when you're hot, you're hot. You know, Weber qualified on row two with a time of 143.152 compared to his teammate who was at 142.841. So I think the only thing that's going to stop Bastian is some sort of a Kablamo or a gearbox gremlin. It could be some other reason, but these are the things that you normally hear from the...
You mean the stuff that always affect Mark Webber?
Yeah, you can say it that way also. Or on a day when Mercedes-Benz has a package that's just fantastic, they could do no wrong, either it's LCH or Pretty Boy Floyd. But I will not be surprised if this guy ends up with 10 or more wins.
Yes,
I would. And with Weber leaving, I don't think he's going to have any mercy for him to pull over and let Weber win a race.
No, I completely agree. And not only that, but the Red Bull seems to be getting better and better, where Ferrari, they're pretty much at a standstill. Lotus has lost their forward momentum. They're at a standstill. Mercedes seems to have lost their edge in qualifying that they had a few races ago. They're at a standstill. And really, a lot of it now is dominated by the development of the 2014 car, which takes so many resources. For a team like Red Bull, it's a piece of cake because they have billions and billions, as Carl Sagan used to say.
Yeah.
But, you know, for smaller teams like Lotus F1, even Mercedes doesn't have a budget anywhere near Red Bull's. 2014 is the focus, and now you're going to see the giant sucking sound from the south, meaning...
You mean the Ross Perot Grand Prix?
Exactly, exactly. That all that effort in 2013 is going to be moved to 2014, and everybody's going to be on automatic pilot for the end of the race, the end of the season.
I agree with you, and I think a lot of effort has been switched to 2014. And I also think that maybe... Mercedes will have a win or two with their dominant position in qualifying and race. They may surprise us. But anything I hear about Lotus now is they have money issues.
That's what we hear every day.
Yeah, I heard that Felipe Massa has a big package of, Brazilian Cruzeiros or Reals or whatever they're using these days. Felipe Nasr's name was mentioned. He might go to... But one thing interesting I saw on ItaliaRacing.net, this is a website in Italian, and somehow they do come up with some information that later everybody is reporting. You know, Kevin Magnussen, son of Jan, is sponsored or supported by McLaren. We'll talk about him in Motorsports Mondial more, but apparently ItaliaRacing.net is reporting that he will be testing with Lotus. Felipe Massa wants to go there. I will not be surprised if Maldonado takes his, you know, ponchos of petrodollars there.
That would be Citgo.
Yeah. And we'll see what happens.
No, very interesting stuff. And really, as I think Vettel continues to dominate, and it's an obvious thing that Vettel has his fourth world championship. More of the talk of where people are going, like Massa, Hülkenberg. Will Perez keep his seat, really, at McLaren, or Fernando come in so they don't have to change all the Spanish nomenclature in his dressing room?
Yes. Well, they only have to change one word from dos to
numero uno.
Uno, yeah. Or equal sign uno.
Yeah, you never know. No, but it's going to be very, very interesting as Vettel continues to dominate the 2013 season. Now, let's go to the race. Do you like these night races? I find it very interesting. I'm not crazy about the artificial light, but in the end, when the camera pans out and you see the twinkle of the lights in the darkness, it's pretty good looking.
It's impressive, and I think, you know, I mean, a race is a race, you know, whether it's in South Asia or South America. But I think for the globalization of the sport and all that, it's good. You know, they say variety is the spice of life. And I know a thing or two about spices. I think it's good for the sport. I mean, one has to look at it, you know, it's such a big billion-dollar business. You just cannot sit here and as a, oh, I'm a purist. I want to race on a racetrack, not on a street course. That's not a reality of life. Time has moved on. So I think it's good. I'm very excited that they have races in so many different parts of the world. So, like, you know, if you have a race in, like, for a race in Malaysia or Singapore, which are next to each other, people who are living in Philippines or Hong Kong or, you know, Ceylon, South India, whatever, they can get there. People from New Zealand, not too far. And it's the same, you know, if you have a race in Abu Dhabi, not too far from Egypt or other places in the area. So, yeah, I like it. I like the globalization. I'm not too thrilled on places where there is no passion for motor racing, and it shows in the lack of attendance.
So, which we will see next
But some
weekend.
Of those issues have been addressed with Mexico coming back on the track. So, yeah, I do like what's happening.
Yeah, Mexico will be a well-attended race.
Moa will be there.
So exciting.
Yeah, I know some people down there. I'm, you know, dealing where I'm working right now. We're dealing with some people. Some of them are racing enthusiasts. I, you know, we also have some listeners down there. And so I'm very much. And that track, you know, Hermanos Rodriguez Autodromo used to be known as Magdalena Michuca, which was a very beautiful name. And I like that track, long straight. It has a lot of history there. You know, Dan Gurney won there. Honda's first victory came there with Richie Ginther. And very good memories there. And that Nigel Mansell pass on Berger. So it's going to be good. And I hear the authentic burritos are pretty good there.
Well, that's the biggest problem with a Grand Prix in Mexico. We're going to become real smart, Alex, again, with the in-flight burrito.
Well, we have to be. It's just, you know, south of the border.
Absolutely. Now, quickly before we go to the race in Singapore, which, of course, there was some machismo-ness at the beginning, I want to mention that I went back to see the film Rush. And not only do I highly recommend this film, but this film is definitely influencing how some of the broadcasters and some of the shows that are being developed. Now, the BBC has a documentary on Lauda and Hunt, which just came out, which I find great. You know, they're riding the coattails of Mr. Ron Howard. But even the BBC's beginning of the coverage of the Singapore Grand Prix, a lot more vintage shots of Formula One, which I like so much. And apparently there's a surge in the vintages of F1. People want to know the stories, the backstories, what was going on. And I think Ron Howard has done not only a great film, but it's good to get the bubbles up to the top.
You're not talking about Bubbles Horsley.
No, I'm talking about Passion.
No, yeah, that's good. You know, like my friend Professor Dan Rubel used to say all the time to me, any publicity is good publicity. So this is good. And for me, you know, I was watching this era and I started in 73. So anytime I see, can, you know, like with that Senna movie, what I really liked is, you know, when they were showing these press conferences with Jean-Marie Bellez.
My friend.
And others behind the scenes, you know, I'm, you know, results anybody can see anytime. I've always been fascinated. What happens behind the scene? How does somebody from a small town in Sweden gets to be a big Formula One driver? How does somebody come from Brazil to England in 1969, don't even speak the language. A year later, he has won a Grand Prix in the United States of America. I mean, these are incredible achievements, and I love it.
Excellent. So keep up the good work, and I suggest going to see Rush 2, 3, 4 times.
Oh, boy, is that a check coming from Ron Howard Incorporated?
It's very possible, Nasser. Anything is possible here in the great United States of America. But anyway, let's get back to this Grand Prix. Wonderful night. No, I was hoping for rain, but we got nothing. Sebastian Vettel on pole. We've got Fernando, of course, qualifying in 7th place. Now he starts 7th in machismo.
Which means he's going to be on the podium.
Exactly.
And if he was starting 17th, that would have meant at least 3rd.
Yes. Yeah. No, it's a phenomenal start. The lights goes out and Well, Sebastian Vettel, great
start. The light stayed on, man, I'm telling you.
Yeah? The light stayed on?
Across the track, that
yes,
is.
Yes, across the track. And by the way, an Italian company does all the lighting for the track.
Yeah, but the lights are made in Iowa.
Really?
Masco Lighting. The company that's arranging is Italian.
Exactly. The wiring and all that, the setup. Yeah. But the bulbs themselves are from America.
Yeah, from Iowa. Masco, I think, is the name of the company. And yeah. I know this because Dave Despain mentioned that on his program, Wind Tunnel, which is no longer there, unfortunately.
The whole channel's no longer there.
Yeah, I know. Gee, I wonder why. And Dave Despain mentioned it was his home state, Iowa.
Yes.
So, you know. Very good.
Absolutely. Great start from Nico Rosberg. For a minute there, I thought that if he could take that lead.
I thought it's going to happen.
I thought it was going to happen too, but apparently Sebastian Vettel is on a mission.
I think I've seen in the last few times now that Sebastian Vettel knows how to outbreak and keep the lead.
He does, especially, and he's very, very good in Singapore. This street race happens to compliment.
The guy is good everywhere in the rain.
Unbelievable. And yeah, his braking and everything else.
Let me tell you, the three examples I'm going to give you, defining moments of a racing driver's career. For me, Ayrton Senna racing in Hockenheim with the McLaren Prost and a Ferrari, trying to pass him, and he just on a fast track it was, and he just would not let him go by. That was fantastic. Michael Schumacher's qualifying at Belgium, first Grand Prix appearance, and Sebastian Vettel passing Hamilton of all the people in the rain in Sao Paulo, which almost cost him his championship, in a Toro Rosso over a McLaren. I said, man, this punk is a little bit above very good.
Yes, no, so outstanding, too bad for Rosberg. Vettel takes back the lead and really never relinquishes it. He begins to pound out laps. Seconds a lap sometimes. Now, I did not see the race, so I don't have lap-to-lap notes. My apologies to everyone. But still, Fernando Alonso all the way up to third place. That start, as he goes out on the outside, goes to the right really hard, goes over. And I really like Nico Rosberg's style. The Schumacher crossover. The field. And he does that a lot now. It could be, you know, he's trying his best because he knows race pace and the Mercedes don't get along too well.
Yeah, you know, it's hard to win a race, especially when somebody is so dominating. So you got to grab any opportunity you can get.
Absolutely, absolutely.
As long as you don't, you know, mess it up and get a penalty for it.
Absolutely. Lewis Hamilton, good start from him. Mark Webber, very typical. And Mark Webber, really, once again, nothing but mechanical issues throughout the race. And it's sad because, as everyone knows, it always happens to him. And Sebastian Vettel, after the race, who wins the race, I mean, he's overjoyed, thanking everybody in the world, saying how perfect the car was. I could keep going forever. I can drive all the way to, you know, Timbuktu right now.
All the way to Australia to say hi to my mate?
Yes, exactly. I thought it was fantastic. Esteban Gutierrez, you know, he started 10th, but lost a lot of ground pretty quickly. Not sure what happened there. Your thoughts on the start, like the first 10 laps of this Grand Prix?
Well, you know, I wanted to see a good race, and I thought if Sebastian Vettel gets dropped down to second or third, it will create some excitement, but obviously did not happen. And it was the usual, you know, usual suspects coming to the top, cream rising to the top, as always. Kind of surprised how Esteban was not in the top 10 running in the early stages. But, you know, these things happen. But overall, very good. And I really do not like people colliding on the start and then having a safety car right away. So anytime there's a clean
It was a very away. Clean start, yeah. Especially for Singapore. Yeah. I was stunned. I mean, the only thing people cutting the chicane at the start to stay out of trouble, but this is probably the cleanest start in Singapore history. It was very impressive. And we didn't have Schumacher going over cars and crashing everywhere. I missed that.
Schumacher. You're talking about Ralph again?
Yeah. Boy, how is Ralph?
He's doing all right. He's enjoying his millions in Austria.
Exactly, exactly. Now, Jenson Button and Sergio Perez, they had a pretty good start, and they had a pretty decent race. But it's not the McLaren of old. And it's, you know, we still have a number of races to go through, and we got to continue to watch a team that used to win Grand Prix, threaten for championships. And now they're not even going to get a podium.
You know, the thing about McLaren, it amazes me, and same with Ferrari. Here's a team that has so much depth of knowledge, experience, money. And, you know, when the race is taking place in Korea, South America, they got people sitting in their office, not just one or two, but a whole team of people monitoring and relaying data in real time. And they can't even put together a car. This is not the first time this has happened with them. Do you remember some years ago they had a car? If I recall, it was an Adrian Newey designed car. It was so pathetic, it was never even raced.
That's true. I remember that.
And they've had quite a few seasons like this, so it's kind of amazing. Maybe, you know, they're pushing the envelope too much and it's not working and it's taking... It takes time to move a big ship, you know, from one side to the other. But, you know, you cannot count them out in the long run. They're going to come back strongly, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Sooner or later.
Yeah. And the big story after this Grand Prix was just the total domination by Sebastian Vettel. Mark Webber dropping out, having a complete mechanical problem on the very last lap. Do you think, I mean, for me, is how is this possible? How could his car run out of coolant, completely explode, and Vettel's car be absolutely perfect?
I don't know, you know, but, you know, I know things have happened, kinky stuff has happened in motor racing and in other businesses also. But I don't think it's being done by design, you know. I don't want to sit here without knowing and saying, oh, maybe Vettel drives more smoothly or whatever. I don't know. I don't know these things, but I don't think it's they're trying to screw him up by the last. I mean, everything is run to extremes. You know, in Formula One, you sometimes have driver run out of fuel in qualifying, and then they get a penalty. But I'm not. Unless there is some proof, I'm not convinced that they are doing this sabotaging. As Marco Andretti said, that McLaren sabotaged his papa's car. I find it hard to believe.
I know. Now, my favorite moments of the Grand Prix were the defiant Nico Hülkenberg, after having to relinquish the position he got passing Sergio Perez. I mean, he was on the phone saying, what? I mean, I thought that was exciting, showing that his, not only his passion, but, you know, he's not going to play the game here. He thought for sure that he got burned. And I thought, I mean, and he kept this attitude all the way to the end of the race. And I thought that was very, very nice to see Nico. You know, because it's interesting because when you compare that to Kimi Raikkonen, I thought it was refreshing and loving.
No, he's a feisty character. And I remember when we did an interview with him once many years ago, it was at Mugello. He was in F3. I think it was his first year in F3. And when I interviewed him, he was nice and very friendly guy. But, you know, he gave me the impression of like a baby fox. Ready for the kill, you know. I mean, he knows how good he is, and when you have drivers like that, I mean, they know what they can do when they're in the right package.
Exactly, and that's the biggest thing for me is I wish so much that we could see him in the right package, and I always thought he would have been a great teammate to Fernando Alonso at Ferrari.
He would have been a very good long-term investment, that's for sure. Kimi, you know, can win a championship next year and then say, you know what, oh boy, I've done it again. I don't need to race hard now. You know, but you won't get that with a young driver.
Absolutely. And the other impressive thing was how well the Lotus F1 and Kimi Raikkonen managed the tires for him to finish in P3. That was very, very impressive. The Lotus does manage these Pirellis really, really well.
I think it's more, I'm sure the car is helping, but I still maintain, just my personal opinion, that Kimi Raikkonen, to me, ever since I've been following, which is 73, is probably the most naturally gifted driver ever to sit in a race car. Yeah, he may not be the most committed, we all know that, but in terms of pure raw talent, this guy is incredible.
And speaking of number twos and bad luck, Romain Grosjean, P3, second row, great start. Of course, Fernando says, you know, I've got to be up front, but for him to drop out of the race with a mechanical failure, of course, the air box, which feeds the pneumatic valves, was failing. They tried to pump it up. No cigar. That was a big... You saw the disappointment on Romain Grosjean's face in the back of the garage. That broke my heart. I wanted to see him do well.
Yeah, it has to do something with the name being French, I think.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But in my case, you know, I like the guy, I like the racer and him. That was very disappointing, and a podium finish for him would have been very good. And for a guy who took so much heat, even sat down one race last year at Monza, it's disappointing. And it's so hard to get on the podium in Formula One. And, you know, with him, it's even harder. He's in the same slot as Massa. You know, I'm very good, but I got nowhere to, you know, here. So that was disappointing.
Yeah. No, especially because he's trying to show that he can be the leader of Lotus F1 next year. So I think we're going to watch Romain Grosjean continue to qualify well and perhaps maybe run into some issues during the race.
Yeah, but I got to tell you something. If they bring in Nico Hülkenberg, I'll be surprised if that pairing lasts very long. That's going to be cage serious rattling. Both are young. Both are very good. Both come from pretty much the same era in junior categories. And both know the other one is very good. So it will become a sort of, you know, who is mentally strong.
Absolutely. And Kimi Raikkonen finishing P3 was unbelievable. But making those tires last as long as they did was really the result of that. And him driving correctly on the tires. It was an impressive podium. Once again, three world champions on the podium. You can't get better than that.
You know, Sebastian Vettel winning in the best package is not a surprise.
No.
You know, but to see Nando and Raikkonen with all his back problems on the podium, it's impressive, very impressive, but really not surprising, I expect. I mean, I'm surprised if Nando is not on the podium, even with the dog of a car he has, or should I say a sick horse. You know, or maybe a jackass. I don't know, a prancing jackass. But it's good to see we're in a time and era we're seeing so much incredible things happening. You know, it's not just on the track. I mean, you know, to see a couple of races back in the U.S., Mexican Grand Prix, I am super excited.
No, it's going to be super exciting.
We're going to have four races. I mean, two in the U.S., one in Canada. I mean, you know, this is very good news for people living in this part of the world.
Absolutely. This hemisphere should be content.
Yes, we need one more in California.
Exactly, exactly. But there you have it, a fantastic Grand Prix with the results almost predictable with kind of driving we see now.
Absolutely. Yeah. Win was number 7 for Bastian, 3 in a row. Like I said before, I expect him to get 10 or more. Fastest lap of the race was also by him at 148.574 and was over a second faster than second place Sutil for Force India. Jean-Eric Wynne had the 5th fastest lap of the race. So again, fastest lap for Bastian is no surprise. I made some chicken scratch notes.
Yeah, and I like chicken scratch notes, and I forgot to mention Paul d'Arista not having a great day.
Was that a surprise? You know, his shine went off. And
Something happened to his chain. I mean, it completely derailed. We were talking about Paul d'Arista, you know, 4, 5, 6 races ago. Oh, my God, he's the darling. He made it, you know.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
from DTM.
Yeah, exactly. And all of a sudden, he has just fallen off the earth.
You know how sometimes two trains don't collide, but they scrape each other?
Mm.
I think that's what happened when Nico Hülkenberg joined Force India. He has left some bruises there, and Sutil has also added a few more. Sutil has impressed me quite a lot, let me tell you.
I agree. Once again, Sutil finishes in the top 10.
Yeah, after missing a season, I thought he was done and dusted. But he's surprised me, and, you know, people used to say, we'll talk about Sergio a little bit later. But let me finish off my
by all means
chicken scratch notes, sponsored by Tyson. Okay, Weber and his woes. Weber has a 10-place grid penalty for Korean Grand Prix, which will put him in deep kimchi. His cabbie ride in Singapore with Nando was his 3rd reprimand of the season, hence the penalty. Here are some other issues for Mr. Weber. In China, in Qali, he was running on empty in Q2 and was unable to return to the pits and was excluded from qualifying. Something like this happened to LCH some years ago. In the race, he hit Jean-Eric Wynne and got a 3-place grid penalty for the following round, which was in Bahrain. And in that race, he played Let's Get Physical with Nico Rosberg. In Canada, got another reprimand for not backing off for yellow flags in Friday's practice. Then came the loose wheel in the German Grand Prix. So he's having a lot of frustrating issues, not all of them of his making. He must be singing his own tune these days. By the time I get to Stuttgart, forget Phoenix and Albuquerque. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
And moi is singing a tune from the Piano Man. I'm taking the Greyhound on the Hudson River line. I'm in a New York, New Jersey state of mind. The big show near the Big Apple is now on the FIA calendar for the 2014 Formula One Grand Prix season. June 1 is race day if all goes well. Congratulations to Mr. Leo Hendry and his peeps for pulling this off. I think for it to be back on the calendar means the check is clear and it's now subject to, you know, Charlie Whiting doing the circuit inspection. It's just street race. People in New York, New Jersey are ultimate hustlers. I think this will happen, and I'm very happy, and I will be there. Will you be there?
We will try.
Okay, good. Two Formula One races in the US of A in 1 year, not bad. Now we need a third one in the streets of Long Beach or Seattle. That is the left coast, baby. Next, JB and SP. And we're talking Southern Pacific here.
Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Smooth Operator is on solid ground for 2014 with McLaren. But his teammate may be on the Carroll King program and may feel the earth move beneath his feet. Both Button and Perez finish in the points in Singapore, but looks like Martin Whitmarsh may look at some other drivers to partner Button next season. And, you know, we live in an age of constant change. McLaren is also pushing the second coming of Magnussen to get a seat in Formula One next season. Kevin won a race in the World Series by Renault this past weekend. And there are also reports, as we mentioned earlier, in ItaliaRacing.net that he might test with Lotus. And I do know McLaren is trying to, actually it's a quote from Whitmarsh in one of the interviews I read, they want to place him in Formula One somewhere, Marussia, Caterham, whatever. And last year he was in the championship, was pretty competitive but could not win because the competition was very brutal, which included Robin Freins and Jules Bianchi. The Lotus lads, one was a sick puppy but made it to the podium, and the other was very impressive but had a sick car and was robbed of a podium finish. Grosjean has done enough now without crashing that he should be able to survive what Ron Dennis calls the F1 Piranha Club. Would you like to see Romain Grosjean in another team next season? Not many seats available.
There's no seats available. I mean, I could see me. You know, I don't know. I think Eric Boullier likes him.
Eric Boullier likes him. Well, they manage the guy also, you know.
Exactly.
And they have sponsorship from Total, and he has become a Frenchman from a Swissman, and they also have Renault engines. So I think this would be the best seat for him. And this is another guy, you know, Ferrari should look at for long term. This kid is good.
He is good.
Yeah. Okay, Team Willy, sinking deeper and deeper and no points in Marina Bay. I will not be surprised if Pastor parks his millions at Lotus for next season, although Nico Hülkenberg is highly reported to be going there, but we all know money talks louder than talent. Just ask Sergei Sirotkin. And talking of the comrade, Sauber are serious about him as one of the 2014 drivers, and let's see how things turn out. Maybe, he is the Russian Raikkonen or the Kremlin Kimi. I like the Kremlin Kimi.
I like that. And I heard that toilets are now working in Sochi.
Oh, boy, what a relief that is.
Just thought I'd bring it up.
But do they have enough paper, though?
Yeah, that's another story.
That has been another, you know, problem over there, over the years. Anyway, keep up the good work to Valtteri Bottas for out-qualifying Maldonado, who started from front row last year in Singapore. So overall, it was a good race. It was good, exciting. There was a lot of push and shove in the closing stages. Now let's look at some sector times. As we know, all F1 tracks are divided into three timing sectors in Singapore. Vettel had the pole, race win, and the fastest lap. But three different drivers recorded fastest time in each sector. LCH was the fastest in Sector 1 at 29.461 seconds. Weber had the fastest time in Sector 2 at 41.494 seconds. And Vettel was the fastest in Sector 3, clocked at 37.439 seconds. The honor for the fastest speed through the speed trap goes to Rosberg at 184.8 miles per hour. Massa was second fastest, while the race winner did not even feature in the top 10. And I had to look at this stat a few times to make sure that this is correct. All this translates into one thing. Red Bull really has the best overall package, along with a damn good racing driver. Would you agree, Mr. Rogers?
There's no doubt. I mean, Red Bull's package is outstanding, and the problem is Adrian Newey's not retiring.
Yeah.
He's going to be there next year.
Yes.
And we could see, even though the rules have changed, new motor, turbo, and everything else, we might see the exact same pecking order we see today.
I will not be surprised. You know, Renault has a lot of experience with turbo engines, and I don't know the technical reason everybody in the media is talking about the Mercedes engine, but it will be good if there is some change. If there is no change and the same guy dominates, it will be fascinating if somebody can equal Michael Schumacher's run of success in such a short time. Championship, no need to say, Sebastian Vettel leading with 247 points. Second, Nando, very, very impressive, 187. Third, Hamilton, 151. Fourth, Raikkonen, 149. And fifth, Webber at 130. So technically, this championship is between Sebastian Vettel.
Pretty much.
Okay, and in the Constructors' Championship, Red Bull 377 points, Ferrari second 274, which really is enough of a gap where they should really try out Ricciardo in a few races.
They should.
Yeah, and third, Mercedes. Remember when Toyota put Kamui Kobayashi in the last two races?
That was so exciting.
How impressive he was.
I mean, that was exciting. Yeah, he was like a young little boy in a candy store, and he was just going for everything.
Yeah, he even snatched his paper candy from the other Japanese driver, Kazuki Nakajima. Remember he banged wheels with him in Brazil?
Exciting.
Yeah, fantastic. And I think that we should see that. But nobody talks about Kamui Kobayashi, even though he's driving a Ferrari these days.
He is driving a Ferrari these days, except that he keeps crashing it.
Gee, what does he think? He's Takuma Sato now? Okay, so where are we now? We did the Constructors' Championship. Shall we take a break and a sip of water?
I think a sponsor break is absolutely needed right now. So anyway, we'll be back after this brief message.
Honesty is something we all look for, especially when it comes to auto service. Honest Engines Auto Service Tallahassee is where you'll find it. Since 2005, they've been delivering trusted, dependable service to Florida's capital. Honest Engines is your full-service auto repair center. Bumper to bumper, they have you covered. Honest Engines Auto Repair offers a variety of services. Transmission repair, oil change service, and much, much more. Don't let just anyone work on your car. Bring it to Honest Engines. They'll give your baby the care it deserves. They work closely with you to make sure you know what's being done. With Honest Engines, you don't have to guess what their team is doing. Their highly experienced and certified technicians know just what your car needs, and they'll make sure you do too. So if you're in the Tallahassee area and you need auto repairs, give Honest Engines a call. 850-421-8461. And tell them F1Weekly.com sent you. Honest Engines Auto Repair. Right on the corner, right on the price. 718 Gay Street, Tallahassee.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial, with the Swami, the King of Karachi himself, Nasser Hamid.
Thank you, sir. Greetings and Mark Marquez regards. This rookie is very, very exciting, Mr. Rogers. And I am loving the way the MotoGP season is going. So we shall start with MotoGP from Motorland Aragon in Viva España. Marc Marquez took another step and victory towards winning the world championship in his rookie season. Isn't that exciting?
Absolutely outstanding.
The kid is only 20 years old, won all three MotoGP races in the US this season, started from pole but had to fight for victory from Jorge Lorenzo, who took the lead at the start. He was also passed by his teammate Danny Pedrosa, but then Danny Pedrosa had a huge crash, and hopefully he's okay, no big injuries there, so which is good. And Mr. Marquez then tracked Yamaha rider Mr. Jorge Lorenzo down and passed him with 10 laps to go. The doctor, Valentino Rossi, also on a Yamaha like Lorenzo, was third. Marquez leads the championship with 278 points. Lorenzo is second on 239, and Pedrosa third with 219. Four races remain. It's still pretty much a fight between Lorenzo and Marquez, but if the rookie can win the championship, and he comes across as a very nice guy. And you know, this English journalist, David Tremaine, I was talking to him at Spa, and he asked me, do you follow MotoGP? And I said, yes. He says, don't you think Marc Marquez looks like a younger Jackie Ickx? And if you look at old pictures of Jackie Ickx when he was in his early 20s, there's a pretty strong resemblance to Marc Marquez. So, very interesting times in MotoGP. Okay, shall we go back to Singapore for Hapidos?
Hapidos.
Are you still following Happy Dos?
I love Happy Dos.
Yeah, me too. And or Shippe Dois, if you happen to tune into the Brazilian or Portuguese network. Okay, only one round remaining after the Singapore weekend, which was very good for drivers on Her Majesty's service. Julian Palmer won the feature race on Saturday over Felipe Nasr and another Brit, James Collado. Sunday's sprint race saw Sam Bird fly over Ericsson's Nest to grab the win from Marcus. The GP2 circus now moves from Marina Bay to Yas Marina, and you may ask yourself who will swim to championship success. The battle in reality now is between Swiss driver and championship leader with 179 points, Mr. Fabio Laimer, and Sam Bird, who is only 7 points behind. Just a few races ago, Stefano Coletti was running away with the championship, and how things have changed. He has not scored a point in many races now. Third man in the championship is cousin Felipe with 148 points. Early season pace setter and leader Stefano Coletti has now fallen to fourth on 135 points. Okay, World Series by Renault from Le Castellet has to be one of your favorite series.
Absolutely.
A victory for Renault assured even before the race starts.
It's the best. It doesn't get better.
Yes. The second coming of Magnussen in the name of the game is the name of the game. Kevin Magnussen is McLaren's man of the future. He was in hot form at Paul Ricard, where he won both races of the weekend. But not so fast, said the technical man. He was disqualified from race one on a technicality, and his damn team is appealing. So Dr. Marco's Portuguese pumpkin, Antonio Felix da Costa, who is also a very good talent, got the win for Saturday's race. This also promoted Belgian Stoffel Vandoorne to second. This is a name that will be heard in high places in the near future. Very good talent. Last year he won the Formula Renault 2.0 with our friend Kaufman Racing Team. So that's pretty impressive going for these two young guys. DTM at Zandvoort, Holland. Marco Wittmann, a young man from Nuremberg, was on pole for the first time in this series in a BMW. We have followed his career since his Formula BMW days. In those days, he was managed by Willy Weber. And I've kept in touch with him. He's a pretty cool kid. Victory in the race went to his Brazilian BMW teammate, Augusto Farfus. Big winner of the day was Mike Rockenfeller. His second place finish for Audi made him the 2013 DTM champion. So congratulations to the Rockenfeller. Wittmann finished fifth, just ahead of another Formula BMW graduate, Adrian Tombay, son of Patrick Tombay. Joey Hand, only Amerikanski in the series, was seventh. Dr. Miguel's compadre, Felipe Albuquerque, was eighth, and Gary Paffett was the top Brit in ninth. I am told by a very, very reliable source that in days gone by, Gary Paffett almost had the Sauber F1 drive. And his management wanted more money, and they said, okay, have a nice day.
Yeah. Now, Gary Paffett, who was supposed to be in F1 as a McLaren test driver, I hate to say it, but he got the shaft.
Well, yeah, you know, Isaac Hayes' music is still very popular.
Exactly, it is. And now he's been in DTM for a long, long time with success at the beginning of his career, and now...
So any team owner can go to Amazon.com and for $2.99 plus tax... You can give the guy shaft. Sad but true.
Watch your mouth.
Exactly. In IndyCar news, Izod is taking the shirt off its sponsorship of the series at the end of the season. And the series, this is my favorite item, on the recommendation of its non-motor racing consultants, will have a race on the Indy road course in May. Can you believe that? The month of the Indy 500, they're going to have a road race at the Indy circuit.
Isn't that bizarre?
Yeah, this is what happens when you talk.
You mean the old F1 circuit?
No, I'm not sure if they will use that because they have a configuration for the MotoGP also.
Correct.
But this is what happens, that if you have a problem with your, let's just say, with your nose, and you go to a doctor who specializes in some feet surgery. I mean, you got to go with the professionals, you know.
It's unbelievable. This series has really taken some bumps and bruises. But losing this Izod sponsorship... Is a big blow.
They've lost their shirt now.
Yeah, literally.
I'm glad they're not sponsored. They don't have sponsorship from Hanes.
Thank you very much.
That would really expose them.
That's true.
and it won't be pretty sight. Let me move on. Okay. I guess Coopers and Librands, I think these are the consultants, have never heard of Road America and Road Atlanta. Two mighty fine tracks in this country. I like both of them very much.
And I'm surprised the IndyCar Series hasn't booked a date for the new wonderful Circuit of the Americas in beautiful Texas.
That could be because of the F1 is going there.
You mean contractually?
It's possible. Possible. It's a fantastic avenue. I've not been there. You've been there.
It's great. I mean, yeah. Indy should be on top of that.
Yeah. But there are so many other, you know, Road America, Road
There's
Atlanta.
Plenty of,
and, the, you know, there's Kent, Washington, Portland, Oregon, you know, take the series to different parts of the country. But no wonder Roger Penske said the series keep shooting itself in the foot all the time.
You know what? I think Indy would be welcome at many cool.
I think a Poe Street race. I mean, they go to, like, Poe Street race would be incredible. Think, or Imola. Imola is available. And, you know, Mugello, Ferrari test track. I mean, there are so many places they can go. But, you know, they can go to Argentina. 100,000 people will show up at the Buenos Aires circuit. But, you know, they're going to do what they have to do. Okay, now some sad news from the glory, really halcyon days of IndyCar racing. George Bignotti has passed away. He was also known as George Bignotti. He was 97 years old and passed away in Las Vegas. He worked on cars that won 7 Indy 500 races. Among them, his winning drivers were A.J. Foyt, Graham Hill, and the gas man from Spokane, Washington, Tom Sneaver. I met George a few times over the years, Clark, and talking to people like him, Phil Remington and A.J. Watson, people who go back to like 1940s, 50s. I mean, Phil Remington was there when Bruce McLaren tested the Ford GT40 Le Mans car for the first time. And this has been one of the great moments for me as a racing fan to be able to have the opportunity to talk to these people. So I was very sad to hear about George, and I believe he was from Northern California. I know he was from California, but I think he was from this area. Okay, life goes on, and we shall move on to some other racing event. Your homeboy, Sebastian Loeb and Alvaro Parent. Now, here is another guy, Alvaro Parent, also known as Alvaro Parente from Portugal. He won World Series by Renault, British F3. No big bugs, so never got to Formula One. But he was pairing with Sebastian Loeb at Navarra in Spain in the FIA GT event. They won in driving a McLaren MP4 12C. So I guess Ron Dennis is happy. That's a very nice looking car. Congratulations also to Max Angelelli and Jordan Taylor for winning the last ever Grand Am race at Lime Rock, Connecticut, with it the 2013 championship. And Lime Rock, if anybody's living in the area or passing through the area, is a fantastic, beautiful location. I would highly recommend. I've been there a few times for Trans Am races. Next year, you know, the Grand Am will cease to exist, and so will American Le Mans, and they will merge to have this thing called United Sports Car Series. So let's see how that works out. They're trying to iron out all the issues, but one series is better than fragmented series, you know.
Now, what about the DTM connection to that?
Well, that introduction in America has been delayed. The concept there is very good. What they're trying to do, have series in America, tin top series in America, road racing that is, in Europe and Japan, have the same type of technical regulation. So a car in Japanese touring car, super touring, can race in DTM, and a car from DTM can race here, which I think is a very good idea. And I'm very excited.
The problem with that idea, though, is like merging the metric system with the American system.
Well, you know, you can make things as complicated as you want or as simple as you want, but the whole idea is that, you know, if a series is allowing V8 cars, the, you know, maximum would be 5 liters. So if everybody has that same, a little bit differences, you know, there will always be differences. You can, you know, use weight or this and that, some handicap. But I think it's very important, especially with this financial kablam around the world, to have, you know, like Trans Am used to be a huge, tremendous series. This was a series where Parnelli Jones, Dan Gurney, IROC world champion Formula One drivers used to take part. So I think we need a series which makes sense. And I love Trans Am, especially because they were one-hour races. I mean, those were some fantastic races. So if we, you know, most car companies here are making a 5-liter engine or a 3.5. So I would like to see a rebirth of the Trans Am series, you know. And there are so, you know, now we have so many car companies, Kia, Hyundai, this and that. So if we get a couple of big sponsors, manufacturers get involved, then it will. Then you will hear that sucking sound in reverse, you know.
Wow.
Yeah, that's the whole idea, Mr. Rogers.
Keep up the good work, Nass.
Okay, now we come to famous last words before we do our interview with Senor Facundo Regalia of Argentina. Anyway, famous last words. As we all know, there is not much unity among the teams, especially when it comes to dealing with Bernie. In other words, money matters. Remember in the days of Grand Prix World Championship when they were trying to start this by some teams and Ferrari's silence was bought by Bernie by paying a bigger slice of the pie? Do you remember?
No, I remember that. That was exciting.
Yes. When asked about his thoughts on teams sticking together, Mr. Bob Fernley of Force India is quoted in Grand Prix Plus E magazine saying, and I quote, "The teams cannot even agree what day it is," end of quote. But our day is over here. And I thank you for listening and hope we stay connected.
Thanks for another outstanding Motorsports Mondial, which means now we have ran into the special interview segment. And of course, I'm talking about the interview with Facundo Regalia.
Facundo Regalia is a young man from Argentina. Him and his peeps are now residing in Spain. He was on his way to become a professional football player and was already signed up with the football team at a very young age. And then he discovered motor racing, and things have never been the same for him. He's enjoying his motor racing very much, doing very well in GP3 this year. And he raced previously in Formula BMW for a couple of seasons. So it was nice to finally check up with him. And, you know, the whole world who are a fan of motor racing, fan of people like Fangio, they want to see another good Argentine driver. We had Reutemann, who won a lot of races. So I wish Facundo can realize his dreams and get into Formula Uno one day. So please enjoy this conversation, and we shall talk soon. Okay, folks, I'm here with young talent from Argentina, Mr. Facundo Regalia. Facu, nice to meet you. How are you today?
I'm okay. Nice to meet you, too. Looking forward to for this weekend.
Okay. You are from Argentina, now living in Spain. Please tell us how you got the racing bug. Was it from your dad or family or reading about Fangio and Lole?
For sure my passion in motorsport is all about my father's family, because the father of my father, my grandfather, raced in Argentina many years ago, and well, their all Regalia's family is since a lot of years ago inside of motorsport, and then well, all my career started when my father could buy me a kart in 2006, because before that I was playing football. So all my life changed after that, and well, since 2006 I'm already inside of this sport.
Now, football obviously very popular in your country. What was more, what made you go to motorsports and not football?
Well, I don't know, because for sure I know, but it was an amazing change that I did, because I was playing football since when I was 3 years old. Then when I moved to Spain, I was even playing one year in Real Madrid club when I was 11 years old. And then with nearly 15 years old, my father could, as I say, could buy me a karting. And then after to test it for first time, I was really surprised, because I felt a really good feelings, you know. And I, since the beginning, I was going fast, you know. And the first race ever in my life in karting, I did pole, and I won the two races there in Madrid. So the adrenaline and the passion was amazing, and the feeling too. So finally, my feeling was to decide to start a new life, a new career in motorsport, and leave finally football.
Okay. Now, it looks like you had a very brief karting career. Did that become a problem or an issue for you when you got into Formula BMW in 2008?
Yeah, for sure. My career in karting was really short, not like most of the drivers starting since they were 5, 6 or 7 years old. I was just 1.5 years in karting because I start too late on in motorsport, and people around me decide to go already in 2008 in formulas. We were looking to do Formula Renault or Formula BMW. Finally, we did Formula BMW Europe in 2008. That was my first year in formulas, and I finished P3 in the rookie championship, and I was from middle of the championship till the end. I was already fighting in top five, so with people like Gutierrez that is now in Formula One already, Tambay in DTM, Bittman in DTM, and people and drivers really fast. So, well, after that, I was also repeating again the category in 2009 and 2010, but for sure was not as easy as normal to start a new year in Formula because of the little experience in karting.
Now, from your karting days, you said you were there for 3 years. What were the best races or high points for you?
In karts?
No, in Formula BMW.
Well, in Formula BMW, I think... Well, best race was in Japan when I won both races.
Okayama.
Yeah, in Okayama. And then I think another really good race was, even in my first year in 2008 in Valencia Street Circuit, I was P3 behind Gutierrez, and Kevin Brace, I remember, in the last lap pushed me out in the bridge. And I finished P6, but that was a really good race, considering that was in my first year. And then in the last year, in Zandvoort, I had a really good fight with Prince, and I finished P2, and he finished P3. And that was a really good fight and a really good race.
Good. Yeah. Now, I noticed that in 3 years in Formula BMW, you raced with three different teams. Was that your idea or other factors involved there?
No, for sure, in my opinion now, after to see how was the 3 years, I think that was a mistake. Because when we did the move to Kaufman in my second year, that was maybe a good decision, but finally during that year we had a lot of problems. I had a really bad luck during the complete year, and then when I went to repeat my third year in BMW, we were thinking to return again to our international to fight for a championship for sure, but we didn't have enough money to race with them, and finally we signed with Aveland because it was the cheapest team for us. So for that reason, we raced with them, and we didn't have a good season in 2010. So more or less, yeah.
From Formula BMW, you went to Italian F3. How strong was the competition in this series compared to Formula BMW? Because, like you said, there were some very strong drivers in Formula BMW.
Well, for sure, I think it was a good move because the Italian Formula 3 was still with a good level, and the car also was really good to still be learning, and for a first year in Formula 3, I think it was a really good category with fighting with Marcello, with Brandon, with Campana, Lewis, fast driver too, and for sure I was not in the best team, because I think the best team for sure is Prema from a lot of years ago, and more or less for the same reason we couldn't race with them because of money. We raced with Ginzani gave us a really good price to do the championship because they were really interested on me, also Prema, but Prema was a bit more expensive. So finally we raced with Ginzani. I did 3 podiums, 1 pole position, 2 fastest laps, and I was fighting the championship till the end of the season. But again, it was a really complicated year with bad luck moments like Mugello when I was leading the race. When there was 3 laps to go, the engine was broken and I needed to stop. So things like this happens during that year, and it was a really big shame because I think I could have been fighting the championship up to the last race in Monza. So it's okay.
You mentioned Rafael Marcello. Is he really good? Because he's having a tremendous season in European Formula 3 this year.
Yeah, for sure he's a good driver. For sure he's a good driver, Rafael. And this year he's doing a really good year. Even last year he did already a good year in Formula 3 Euro Series. For sure, as I say, he's in the best team, and also he's an advantage. But he's a good, for sure, he's a good driver, and he deserves it, for sure, yeah.
Now, in these junior series, you know, the car, these are spec series, same car, same engine. Is there still a big difference between which team you go with? Is going with that one team very different than with another team? Does a good team make a big difference?
Oof, yeah, for sure in this sport, yes. To be one of the best team of the category is always one of the pieces to be always in the top. For example, I think this year I'm in one of the best team of GP3 and look where I am, you know. Last year I was in my manager's team in Campos Racing. In AutoGP and Formula 3, and the only problem was technical problems, but the team was really strong always, and we were able to be fighting for both championships, and for sure that's make a lot of difference, yeah.
Adrian Campo still managing your career?
Yeah, for sure. He's around here. To be honest, I think he's one of the most important persons around my career, plus my family and my father. And I'm really happy for that, because I think to have a person like this, who was managing Fernando Alonso in the past and Marc Gené, really strong drivers, I'm really happy to be managing with him, and we will see up to what we can finish, yeah.
Now, last year you were a busy man doing two series, AutoGP and European F3. Which series was more challenging and more rewarding?
Well, for sure AutoGP was a really challenging moment for me, because the car was really amazing, especially because of the power, with 150 horsepower, and quite similar to a GP2 car, so that was a really good experience for me, because also with the stops during the races to change tires, that was also a really good experience for me for the future. And I could do only 5 races. The last 2 I couldn't do it because of a coincidence with the schedule of Formula 3, because the priority was for Formula 3 because I was fighting a championship. And yeah, I think AutoGP gave me a really good moment. I had 3 podiums, and up to when I finished the championship, I was P3, so I think I was doing a really good job with the team.
Okay. Now, this year your first victory came at the Nürburgring, and going into Spa, you have 90 points, 1 point behind the championship leader, and behind you are 3 drivers on 75 points each. So what is Senor Campos advising you? Keep calm and carry on, or turn up the heat?
No, for sure. He's telling me every time to be calming down, to be thinking a lot, to be really concentrating on this weekend. Will be really important to go to Monza even better than now. But for sure, the most important thing is to be taking points in both races, be constant, and be fighting always in the top. That's the most important thing, as I was doing in the last races. So, and for sure, to be in front of Elinas especially, that will be one of the most important things this weekend. So for sure we will try to do to put all on the table and fight for everything this weekend with the team, because also the team is doing a really fantastic job since the beginning of the season, and we are quite confident, yeah.
Tio, you mentioned he's leading the championship. Apart from him, who are the other drivers you consider are good racing drivers?
I think all the drivers in this category are amazing. You know, the level of GP3 this year is really, really high. I think it's the hardest GP3 year, considering the all the GP3 years. I think, yeah, Harvey, my two teammates are really strong too. Corpus and Baño, well, Linas, the two Red Bull drivers. There is a lot of people really strong, and for sure you, for that reason, you need to be really, really focused on everything and not to do mistakes, to be always in front.
If you have a choice for 2014, what series would you like to do?
Honestly, for the moment GP2, because I didn't take and I couldn't drive never the World Series. I cannot say that I would like to do World Series too, because it's also a really good category. But I think for the moment GP2, because the next step must be GP2 to be still over the Formula One world, around the Formula One world, and I think could be a good idea. But for sure, we will try also, if it's possible, to be inside of a Formula One team. That could be awesome.
We do a program from California. Do you follow American racing series like IndyCars or NASCAR?
Yeah, for sure. I'm following all the IndyCar races, and for sure it's amazing the motorsport in America, all the fans, and I'm talking every time with Connor, and he's telling me about the passion and the fantastic fans that are there, and also for sure we were talking about a bit the IndyCar car, you know, that is also quite amazing. Yeah.
Final question: your favorite track and favorite racing driver of all time, if any?
My favorite track is Nürburgring, as always, and I can say Nürburgring and Hungaroring. That's my two favorite tracks, and my favorite driver ever is Juan Manuel Fangio.
Yeah. Good choice.
Yeah, yeah.
Muchas gracias.
Muchas gracias. De nada.
Yeah, nice meeting you, man. All the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. Facundo, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com. And now, 50 words from the forum.
Okay, la listeners, Desiree back again with 50 words on the Singapore Grand Prix. Anybody can join our forum and give their 2 cents in 50 words or less on the race, and we will read it during the race podcast. Starting with the Venerable Dr. Mark. After a dull procession for an hour and 40 minutes, we get an entertaining 20-foot sprint race as the tire strategies work out. Respect to Kimi and Fernando, but Seb's serene progress continues. Thank you. From Neon Zapper. Neon Zapper says, the kid with the fastest car wins. And he did. Thank you. And from Ye. Hi, Ye. The last 20 minutes were gripping. Shame that wasn't for podium positions. Seb must have been, on average, at least a full second a lap faster than everyone else. Red Bull needs to admit the booing is due to Malaysia. Alonso outdrove that Ferrari once again. They would be mad to sack him. Kimi outdrove that Lotus too. They were mad to let him go. As for the stewards' decision, bullcrap, all of them. Thank you. And from Frank Douglasson. My DVR failed to record the race correctly. I shall mourn for weeks at the loss. They're axing this so-called track from the calendar next year, right? And from Leon Bray. The worst race so far. If it wasn't for the occasional aerial shot, I think it is the same shot they keep inserting, you would think that they are racing in a tunnel. Thank goodness for the safety car as the field was strung out in a procession. One race I can do without. At least the top three drivers in the field were on the podium and there was a kerblammo. Stewards applied the regulation in a sanitary manner, just like Singapore. Thank you. There you have it, and there you go.
I want to thank all the listeners. Good night.
Thank you, and bye-bye.